Okay.
Yeah. What we're going to do for the next couple of weeks, until you kind of get bored of it, is we're going to look at some topics and talk about them through all of those social justice lenses that we talked about. So, coming back to all of the different frameworks we talked about, but to the main basic things, we're going to look at what are the ethics of social justice around these issues. And just to remind you, there are kind of 6 points that we'll look at as we as we explore these issues, right? The first is individual versus group rights. So what are the individual rights? What are the group rights? As we're developing our ethics, finding what is the right balance for those things. We're going to look at it through the lens of ingrained versus and historic injustices. So where in this issue are there historic injustices that we maybe don't see because they're part of our implicit biases? What is the common good versus the individual good, which is a little bit different than individual versus group rights? Okay, so common good versus individual good. What is the option for the vulnerable? So we've talked about God having a preferential option for the poor. What are the options for those who are particularly vulnerable? The care of creation, because that's...
Say again?
The care of creation, which is one of the things that God entrusted us with, was the care of the environment and the world. So how does this impact our duty to care for the natural world? And then the last one is solidarity. How does this build a common community, a sense of community, as opposed to just might makes right, I'm in it for myself. I mean, if we want to just stick with, well, what's just good for me, that's fine, but that doesn't have anything to do with building a community. We know what that world looks like when we do might makes right and whatever's good for the strongest individual is what happens. And we build communities because we don't like those outcomes, largely. So, and I generally avoid politics, but I think we can't really avoid making immigration our first when we start, because our whole world seems to be talking about it.
Yes.
So let's start with that. And what I want to start with is, what do you know, what's in your head about anything, let's start with from Scripture, that references immigrants, refugees, foreigners, what Scripture are you aware of?
Well, immediately it comes to mind what I talked about the movement of people, starting with Joseph getting and Mary having to go back to a particular location for a census count. Mm-hmm. But then I'm also thinking about diasporas, mm-hmm. Across centuries, mm-hmm. and how that really is an immigration. When a whole group of people have to leave, mm-hmm. due to oppression of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Or for lack of resources, mm-hmm. which
the water, famine for one.
Yes, mm-hmm. water and famine water. Seem yeah. to be two very primary points, right. all across the centuries. Mm-hmm. And in one of the articles I read someplace in the last month, it commented that the current population shifts on the globe. Mm-hmm. is the biggest, of course, it's the biggest population in the globe, too, but the magnitude of the shifting populations is the biggest percentage-wise in the history.
The current shifting
that's going on.
Is it primarily in the Middle East or where?
No, it's global. Mm-hmm. It's just that we don't hear much about the other ones.
Does that refer to density of populations? Is that what that means?
No, I think they were simply saying that if you take the fact that we are the largest population the globe has carried, ignore that. Just think in terms of percentages of people that are moving. It's the highest percentage of people in known history, whether that's verbal, passed on history, or whether it's written. It didn't say prehistoric. It just said in the known history of man. It's the largest movement of people, and they put it to, wars, but they also put it to water and famine.
Mm-hmm. And what about dictators that are just so abusive?
Pardon me?
What about dictators like in Syria that are so abusive? That,
right.
You know, a lot of the population
and that would probably come
out
under war slash violence, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. More general.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking of this verse, as you do this to the least. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly.
When Jesus says, that which you have done to the least of these, you have done to me. That fits in here. And also, if you think about the history of the people of Israel, Joseph taking, because Joseph ends up in Egypt, all of his family ending up in Egypt because of famine. So those are economic migrants,
pressures,
right? Mm-hmm. And then ending up enslaved. Mm-hmm. And when they return to their land, they find people there. They find people there, right? Mm-hmm. And as the Israelites are taking over that land and developing their nation, one of the laws God gives them, and this is in the book of Leviticus, is you will not oppress a foreigner or a stranger living among you, because remember, you were strangers in Egypt. And it comes out of that. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Remember what was done to you. So the command of God's people is...
Do you know what... It's Leviticus?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember the chapter and verse, but it's in Leviticus.
How are the first few words? That's how I look it up. Do you know what it is?
You shall not oppress are the first few words, depending on what translation you read. But
I'm writing letters to editors and senators and
good for you. And
that would be a good one. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's also that, this is a little different, but the rich man, easier for a rich man, whatever.
Yes, it's easier for a rich man to go through an eye of a needle
than to enter the kingdom of God.
I think it's the camel goes through
that's right.
Because I thought the rich man was later.
That's right.
Didn't the Israeli, I don't know if it was a whole nation or part of them, weren't they exiled again into, what was it, Babylon?
Into Babylon, that's right. Into Babylon. And that's displacement due to war.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Which is one of the things that we need to keep in mind as we talk about this issue normally. The idea that nations have set borders that don't change
is a figment of our imagination.
Well, and is exceedingly recent.
Mm-hmm. It's a modern concept.
Yeah, it's a post-World War II modern concept.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Before that, the borders of your nation changed. I mean, depending on
political circumstances,
mm-hmm. wars and expansions, and I mean, look at the United States.
Yes.
First of all, there were nations here when we came here.
Yes.
As we know in Western New York, right?
Yes. There were manifest destiny to.
Right. And so our nation was just that little strip along the seaboard, not even including Florida, right? Mm-hmm. And then we did some purchasing from other European nations who had conquered places. And then we did some conquering of our own.
Some killing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And particularly in the Southwest, that border was movable until really relatively recently in our history.
Yeah. Yeah, the Mexican War.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. The 1800s. Mm-hmm.
1880s or 90s?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after the Civil War.
Teddy Roosevelt was in it, so that would have been like 1890s.
That's right, mm-hmm. Rough Rider.
So we tend to think, you know, we think in our own world about national borders being...
Well, and then there's Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Hawaii.
Right. And Hawaii, then, that became part of our nation.
That had nothing to do with us, except that we managed.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, I think it's the concept of country borders. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't, I don't think, imagine that as much mm-hmm. as when you're traveling through, like, Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Or
yes.
smaller continental areas mm-hmm. where the borders, you know, are so obvious. Mm-hmm. But not here. We're so vast. I mean, we have Canada, mm-hmm. if you live in West New York.
Mm-hmm.
But other people, you know, around the country, the U.S., they talk about going to another country. Well, for us, we grew up, you know, with this border, and mm-hmm. I don't even think of it as a border.
No.
It's a different country.
Yeah. Well, now, but now if you have an EU passport, you can go to all those countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Who knows if that'll last, but...
And so the issue then becomes, how do we talk about mm-hmm. national borders, but how do we also talk about the kind of unofficial borders of groups, right?
Well, and when I commented on Hawaii and Alaska,
mm-hmm.
I neglected to say, forgot to say,
mm-hmm.
Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's about as illegitimate a thing in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are all things that sort of belong to us, but that's not how we treat the people.
No,
absolutely not.
The U.S. Virgin Islands is another example of that.
Yes.
And if you asked a lot of people in our country, especially mm-hmm. if you're working with a group of newly come
mm-hmm.
people,
mm-hmm.
and you ask some outsider to your group why Puerto Ricans should be let in, why Costa Ricans or any of these others should be, and they think they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But we have control over their governments.
Mm-hmm. And this immigration debate is happening also in England, where people from former colonized places have a right of entry into England. And so they are having a similar issue about, well, why are you here? Well, we're here because you were there.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's good.
You know, that's a comp for particularly Indian people in London, you know. Well, why are you here? Well, we're here because you're there. You were there.
Yeah.
You know. And so that's a whole different play on the immigration issue. But one of the things we have to talk about is the idea of nation not being tribe. Because for most of human history, your nation was your tribe. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or your tribe was your nation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Both.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Both and.
Okay.
And nation had very little to do with geographic boundaries, because those shifted all the time.
Absolutely.
But it had to do with your tribe. So your nation was
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
your tribe, your people.
Tribes moved.
Right. Yeah. Well, tribes moved around, but also tribes tend to be... How do you get to be a member of a tribe?
Yeah.
You have to be born to
it. You have to be born into it, right?
Yes.
Or marry into
Or marry into it. Or and really, if you're marrying into the tribe... You're either at the very highest level, you're, you know, the warlord's daughter, you know, from the neighboring tribe, coming in as the princess, or you've been captured mm-hmm. and you're spoils of war.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't really, you know, people didn't fall in love with, mm-hmm. Romeo and Juliet notwithstanding, people didn't fall in love with, and marriage wasn't about love anyway.
Right. That's
a property. Right. So your tribe was the people who were related to you in some way. So our concept of the nation, of citizenship, of people who are Americans like us because they were born here, or because they chose to become Americans, that's also a really different
Yes, the Iroquois Nation was one of the few of the early nations on this continent to have that concept, because they had that conference of six different tribes that were their own genetic and family tribes with their own leaders, and they grouped together as the Iroquois Nation. And that was kind of what our first forefathers, you know, used as a map.
And for much of American history, there were really no immigration laws.
They wanted people.
Exactly. The goal was to get the nation populated so people were welcome to come. We really only started putting limits on immigration when people started coming from outside of Western Europe. People started coming.
They didn't look like us.
That's right.
People of color.
Well yes, but people of color at that point
were slaves.
Well, but meaning Italians and Poles and
yes. But also the Northern and the Baltic, like the Russian and the Baltic countries.
Yes.
Of those Central Europeans. So it must have had something also to do with perhaps linguistics.
Labor force.
You know, and religions, because a lot of those people were Jewish, and they were Catholic. Irish need not apply, sort of thing.
When my great-grandparents came here, Polish people and Italian people were not considered white.
Actually, I won't mention names because it's very local, but I'm very conscious of the fact that I moved from the city, from Buffalo, out here, when I got married. And then I went to work eventually at the library. And working there with several people, some were Polish and some were Italian, I found that one of the major churches did not allow them at their services. And so they founded a mission church also in the area that accepted Polish and Italians. And this was in the 50s and the 60s. So this whole concept, I have an Italian daughter-in-law, and she's first generation. And it's just interesting because they're very sensitive about being in line with Africans. And, you know, that whole Hispanic thing, those are not just strictly Spanish. They're on the things that you fill out, the nationality things. Hispanic is kind of a different grouping.
It is a separate grouping.
And somehow I have come to wonder if it's because of the period of the Moors being in Spain and Portugal and the intermarriages and the because there was a peaceful period of that period. And I wonder if that's how come Hispanics are sort of, they're not blacks, they're not Europeans, they're not Spanish. They're Hispanics. And what makes that different call?
My daughter-in-law is first generation Puerto Rican. And when she and my son got married, the wedding looked like I just kept looking around because all the relatives from Puerto Rico came. And half of them are Puerto Ricans and half of them are black Puerto Ricans. And the concept of intermarriage between the races doesn't really even exist in Puerto Rico. And yet, she is still experiencing prejudice as a Puerto Rican. And my 60-year-old grandson pointed out, I said something to him one day, and he said, "Mimi, I'm Hispanic. I'm half Hispanic." He's been taught the pride of being Hispanic. Not the, although he's going to face, I think, you know, some prejudice.
But I think people from India, namely, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Over there by China, and mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I think they suffer from the same
yes.
thing. I mean, they're not black and they're not white, but mm-hmm. and I associate with a lot
Asian.
Of them
mm-hmm.
in graduate school, so I'm mm-hmm. very aware of, mm-hmm. of their mm-hmm. situation too. Mm-hmm.
Brown,
and also,
brown skin.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. and other people from the Far East, even Japanese people mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so forth. They're all in that ambiguous category.
Well, and that's another example of when we started having immigration laws was when Chinese workers started coming over mm-hmm.
for the railroad.
And then we, you know, they passed the Chinese Exclusion Act, which said you could come and work, but you couldn't be a citizen.
Mm. Yes.
So
it's like that worker's visa.
Mm-hmm.
You can mm-hmm. come and work for a certain number of months, but then you have to go home.
Mm-hmm. Slave labor. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, and then of course there's the slavery issue.
The real slavery.
The real slavery issue.
Internment of mm-hmm. Japanese. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying this has gone out. This isn't a new
thing. This isn't a new thing.
This is something that's
and as a matter of fact, if you read history, and Buffalo's a great place to do it because we can see it coming, is that every wave of immigrant that comes in, the first generation or so, they are the other.
Yes.
And they build...
yes, the other.
They build kind of self-contained communities yes, to support
do.
Each other.
To survive.
To survive. And they will have maybe newspapers in their own languages, certainly
stories
worship in their own languages.
Yes.
And so, you know, when my grandparents... were growing up in Cleveland, they lived in Polish Town, mm-hmm. Kaiserville, they called it.
Yeah.
And they had a Polish newspaper and a Polish
yes.
language church and,
you
know, all of those things. And the kind of wider community said, mm-hmm. well, why don't you just,
mm-hmm.
you know, why don't you just speak English? Why don't you,
yes.
why don't you eat our food? Why do you eat your food? Why do you, you know?
Yes.
And then the second generation and into the third generation, the kids go to school and they learn English, and maybe they don't speak
mm-hmm.
the native
because,
language anymore.
Because they
exactly.
were criticized for
right.
speaking
yes.
it,
and
so now the parents want to wipe
right.
it out.
And they say, you know, we're Americans.
Yes.
And then the subsequent generations
yes.
rediscover the pride. And then the food enters our
and
national.
Can be bilingual.
Yeah, and the
yes,
food
yes.
enters our culture, and the celebrations
yes.
enter our culture.
Yes.
So we now have Dingus Day, right?
Yeah.
And Kwanzaa.
If you go to
right,
which mm-hmm. Polish people mm-hmm. in Poland
don't
have
do.
No clue.
Right.
and
the same thing, you know, the same thing is true with St. Patrick's Day. They celebrate St. Patrick's Day in Ireland,
like
but not the way we do. I mean, it's a minor feast day. It's not, you know. And corned beef and cabbage is an American thing.
Yes.
Yes. And you see that...
However, beer is universal.
Well, yes. But you see that with every generation.
Yeah.
And so if you look at the history of Buffalo, this is why we have, you know, and why places, bigger cities than us, have Chinatowns
so
and Italian
sure.
villages. And
I mean,
yes.
There's
yes.
Polish neighborhood, Italian,
yes.
Yes.
German,
but
all
is that why we are all
yes.
more, you find the coasts are the more accepting people. Is
yeah.
that because you live among them? I mean, is the...
Yes. Yeah, places
yeah.
where you see
like
more immigrants
Midwest.
Than...
Yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. And Chicago is... a city like that.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, that's my only feeling is people who have these immigration problems, are you too isolated that you haven't... I mean, we really enjoy the different
mm-hmm.
cultures
yeah.
of our
friends. Yes, but we're removed from the onslaught of
mm-hmm.
of the immigrants coming in
mm-hmm.
because Canadians are not rushing to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we don't live on the coast with the immigration push,
yeah.
and it isn't there right now.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
the city of Buffalo is
no, but Buffalo,
yes.
Buffalo has the latest
yeah.
group is the.
But we've invited them, and we have our groups that settled them have made presses in the cities that bring them in to have them shipped up here. I mean, why would normally an African person choose a snow belt country as a state to come and settle when they've never even seen snow? But we take them and other cities don't.
Well, yes and no. I mean, Buffalo is a refugee resettlement city, and so
yes,
that's how
yes.
the first wave
yes,
of kind of our current immigrants, Burma and...
We have Maya, a lot of Maya.
Myanmar.
Myanmar. Yes. Myanmar.
Yes. And, you know, a couple of these other places. But then once you have a small community, you get a bigger community. Because the word spreads.
Right.
That,
yes. Right. They move to where their brother is.
Right. Or, you know, or just, you know, I heard that there were, you know. Mm-hmm. And you see the same...
The university does a lot for
the university
here.
Does that, too. Mm-hmm. But you see the same thing happening. I mean, if you read, even if you just read the Buffalo News, you see the... Especially the comments section. I don't normally suggest reading comments on the internet.
I know.
But read the comments section of the Buffalo News online when they do a story about immigrants. Oh. And you'll see the, well, why don't they, why are they here, why don't they, you know, mm-hmm. why don't they speak English, why don't they, why, they're taking our jobs, you know. And if you pick that story up and look for a similar story in the Buffalo News in the 1800s, you would see exactly the same thing written about the Polish people. So the notion of who is the other changes.
And how we define it.
And how we define it and how we welcome the other.
And often it's religion. Mm-hmm. It's Catholics. Mm-hmm. And it's Muslims, mm-hmm. and it's Jews, mm-hmm. and it's rarely Protestants, mm-hmm. but Protestants formed the country mm-hmm. initially. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were the ones that
the
were
first
escaping.
Immigrants. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the movie about the Mary Queen of Scots, mm-hmm. and you get the Papists. Mm-hmm. Holy cow!
Just saw that last
night. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, the Papists.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my family were called Papists in Michigan.
Yeah.
Yes,
really?
In Grand Rapids, mm-hmm. when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Read the back of our prayer book, the Articles of Religion.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Papist doctrine of purgatory.
Yes, exactly.
We reject. And if you read the original, the first thing that was translated into English for worship was the Great Litany in the Church of England. Mm-hmm. The Great Litany, as Thomas Cranmer, our founder, translated it, included a prayer from the Bishop of Rome and his detestable enormities. Good Lord, deliver us.
Yes.
So this distinction between Catholic and Protestant is
and it's
deep
long lived.
And
I
long
mean,
lived.
It still exists in a lot of places.
If you look at the original deeds
I mean,
of your
in our
home,
country,
in Clarence, if you look at the original deeds of your home in Amherst and Clarence and Lancaster, you may well find that in the original deed, they were not permitted to sell it to anyone who was not white Anglo-Saxon Protestant.
Sounds like my neighborhood now.
Because. That's
why we are what we are.
Yeah. Deed restrictions was a way to to limit where those other people live.
Oh my goodness.
And so the Anglo-Saxon Protestants are like us. And this is my family story. My mother's family is English Anglican. And my grandmother was a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
they're
GDR.
Early.
Holy
my father's family is Polish, who immigrated with my great-grandparents. And when they got married, it was really considered a mixed marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because not only was it a Protestant-Catholic marriage, but it was, you know...
Balkan
and Anglo-Saxon. And this was... a lot of my grandparents' friends didn't come to the wedding. On both sides.
Yes.
Because they both, you know... actually, as a matter of fact, my father's parents... The wedding was in my mother's church. My father's parents' priest said that they were going to hell if they went to the wedding.
Oh, yes,
and,
exactly.
And my grandfather said, well, that's okay then. You know?
We were told that about my sister's wedding mm-hmm. in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, this is
my 1964. She married an unbaptized Protestant person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know. When I got married, my husband's family was Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, we won't come to the wedding unless you have it in a Roman Catholic church.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So we did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did. Because mm-hmm. we were trying to be accommodating.
Mm-hmm. My daughter-in-law will still not receive communion here.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's...
not a Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
No, my sister-in-law is like that.
She goes up there.
She'd rather not receive it all then.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. she won't even, wouldn't even go up. She doesn't come with me, but it's certainly not a problem.
When they've been here, she'll go up. And of course, my son was very Jewish, so he, you know, sits in the pew.
My mother's from a small town in southern Missouri near the Ozarks. Mm-hmm. There was a law on the books while I was alive that no person of color could stay overnight in this town.
Well, you have to see the Green Book. Movie, The Green Book.
Yeah, I'd like to see
that. Yeah, that is supposed to be.
Don't you find religion is more of a divider than even nationality?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Even among ourselves, I mean, you know, in the Catholic Church, there's the whole gradient of the where people feel, and you know, people are just getting to the right, to the left. But religion seems to be such a divide.
Well, and this idea, the idea that you are a nation of choice, is actually a very rare concept in the world. And one of the debates about immigration is that concept. That there can be a nation of people who choose to be...
It's an experiment.
It's an experiment. When we talk about the Great American Experiment, that's what we're talking about. Is can a nation exist that is solely...
Democratic.
Democratic and people who choose to be a part of it. So that is open to including...
And all the different...
You mean choosing to be without people telling them, no, you cannot.
Right. So...
better way of saying it.
You know...
No, I didn't mean to correct that.
So...
No, but, you know, our minds, humans, I think of the cruelest species on Earth to one another. It's very hard.
We need to continue our program where we had somebody from another
two different religions
came and spoke here.
And we're going to look at world religions here next. But so the question then is, when we look at immigration, let's go back and look at our six things. If we look at for America, and let's stick with America because that's where we are. How would we balance, justly, individual versus group rights on the issue of immigration? The right of the individual and the right of the society.
So the individual is the person trying to get in, and the group is...
Well, let's start with that lens, and then we can flip it around and talk about the rights of individual Americans versus... group rights. But let's start with the individual, and let's take refugees out of it because there are laws about that. Let's talk about economic migrants, which is really what we're talking about when we talk about immigration.
Yeah. Asylum seekers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and most of the people who are seeking asylum are economic migrants. We have a handful of people who seek asylum who are...
From violence.
Political migrants.
Political migrants, but...
Or violence.
Dictatorial
country that's killing them.
Right. And we can also then bring into that what what responsibility do we have for the instability of Central American countries?
And that's a whole volume.
What responsibilities do we as Americans have for the well-being of the rest of the world?
Well, that's a question. But the question I want to... The more narrow question is... As a nation, we spent 100 years interfering in the governments of Central America and destabilizing them. So what responsibility do we as a nation bear for
putting in our own dictators,
the people who are now fleeing the situations we helped create?
Absolutely.
I think the average person in the U.S., their fear of immigration and immigrants is we have limited resources in the U.S. And just between the sheer number of people who already live here, jobs, stuff like that, and that's what scares, I think, the average person. That's the only reason that they would support Donald Trump and all his shenanigans. But it's fear.
And yet our birth rate is going down.
Our birth rate is going down.
We have fewer. We're having fewer people here. I think that's a general feeling. That.
Yes. But I think on the average, I think our population is still growing.
If we,
fear of change, fear of different.
Yes, there, the different.
I think it's more fear of one's own survival. You know, just.
But
being
we
able
have
like
more resources than most
sure
other countries on the globe.
Pardon?
We have more resources available per capita than almost any place on the globe.
I think Russia is probably up there. China.
Per capita? I don't
know. Not per capita.
Not China, per capita.
I think people are thinking financial. When you hear about the Buffalo Public Schools and the funding that is really needed to take care of all the people who come in who need English as a second language, you know, that's, I think, where people's fear is. You know, how much money do I have to contribute to people who need health care, who need education, who need... I think that's maybe where people are coming from.
But I think people are fearful that that's not going to be true for much longer because of the job situation. You know, there's a lot of... there are not a lot of good-paying jobs. I mean, you know, the unemployment rate might be going down, but everybody's working at Walmart and, you know... Not everybody, but I exaggerate, but, you know, I mean...
People aren't looking at the whole picture, though. They don't look at what happens to immigrants as they assimilate, you know, and how much education they get and what they contribute later. They're not looking at any of those things.
No, they're looking at them as competitors for the...
But in fact, immigrants will do jobs that nobody else will do.
I was just going
to
say
they can't find people to do the picking in California now that, you know, it has been limited.
It's not just in California. It's here. It's, I mean, go to...
To Eden County.
Go to Akron and talk to the dairy farmers.
Yes.
They can't find people to milk the cows.
Yes, and down in Eden, they can't find people to pick the beans or the cabbage or the corn or any of that. And back to when we first started thinking about limiting immigration, like the Chinese Exclusion Act, the only thing that we wanted the Chinese to come in for was to dynamite the Rocky Mountains to put the railroad through, and that was the most dangerous job there was, and they were the only ones that would do it.
Yeah.
Americans wouldn't do it. And then when the Irish were coming in, they were coming in this coast, and they were very much wanted for digging a famous canal that went across New York State.
And what about the Brooklyn Bridge?
And building the Brooklyn Bridge. And both of those were killers.
Yeah.
They were
so
killer jobs. Most of the
killed.
People that worked on them did not survive.
Right.
They died of disease on the canal, and they died from dangerous situations and disease in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I think it's bad to get into that mindset that you're bringing in people with low education.
Right.
Low, 'cause you get many times you get people who are not, maybe they haven't been educated, but they have the capacity to do more.
Yeah,
or the better jobs.
You know, if you talk to your Uber driver, how many of them are engineers from or doctors from where they were
and
who are working on?
I was with my sister in Florida, and one woman was a teacher. She had been a doctor, but when they came up, she wasn't allowed to practice. I don't think she was even allowed to get her certificate unless she went back to school for four more years.
No, so I knew that a doctor like that, too, and she had been a dentist in Bosnia, and there was no way she could get licensed here.
But I think that mindset that they're all just, you know, helps us think, well, it gives them that image of being...
Below us.
Especially if they dress differently than us and they speak and look differently, then we assume that they don't know anywhere near as much as we do and shouldn't have that job.
Well, and let's... One of the reasons this is such an issue recently is we have more communication tools.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
So
yes.
in the 1800s, if you lived in Cleveland, in East Cleveland... you would know about Kaisertown. But if you lived on the west side of Cleveland, you might not even know that this place exists. Or you might hear about it, but, you know, big deal. Now we are a national culture, and so when you call for consumer help, you get the For Spanish Press 2, because that company works across the country and is aware that there are, you know... and so you're like, well, wait a minute. This is my country. You know, why are they
offering 14 languages?
Right.
I mean, you get your bank statement.
Oh,
and
yes.
On the flip side, it has the, you know, the thing that should be in bold in English from our perspective. and there's at least 24 languages. Mm-hmm.
My statement from Independent Health every month.
Yes.
Has a piece of paper that has languages I've never even heard of.
Yes.
But businesses, I think, are at the forefront of introducing, you know, yes. I can remember going to Home Depot the first time and seeing things in different languages, and there was no law passed that said you had to do that. No. They're the ones who figured, hey, I need the business, if I want the business.
Exactly.
So maybe it's a necessity thing where, you know, businesses realize we cater to everyone who comes and we should get
it. It's not a bad idea. It's just a very different information line that we never had before.
But it confronts
us
individually with the sense of, wait a minute, the other is here.
Yes, and how many of those others required all these lines of different languages?
Well, I love the instructions.
You yes.
yes.
yes, if you ever get furniture from IKEA. No. So that's, you know, that. So as we talk about the individual versus the group, you talk about the individual migrants.
And how do you versus, quit feeling like the other?
But also the individual American versus, you know, one of the things that is being talked about, certainly among sociologists, but we're seeing reflected in broader political discourse, is the sense of becoming a majority-minority nation, which we're on path to do. That the white, I'm not going to say Anglo-Saxon Protestant because we now include other people in white, but that what we define as white will be the minority, will be a minority. Yes. Not that there will be a majority of one other race, but that...
And doesn't that immediately in me produce an anxiety of, will they see social justice the way I see social justice? Will they be doing all the right things
in
that
my
I
mind,
think are
it
the
creates,
right things?
Because I think of the Christian faith. You know, the way, especially the way now in the United States, we're pushing it and we're putting down people. What happens if the Muslim faith becomes the majority? What are they going to do about it? So it should help you to say, I need to be ecumenical so that when they turn around, they hear us.
Do not oppress the foreigner living among you, for you were foreigners in the land of Egypt.
Oh, my.
You know, and we come back to that. Treat others the way you would wish to be treated.
Right.
And it's like, hope they do
realize,
the same.
Don't you realize that this is...
Well, that's another issue entirely. Mm-hmm. Because,
But my
you
first
talk about... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
My first reaction to that community in the Midwest, that is actually not predominant, but completely Muslim. There is a community, I think it's in Michigan. My first thought was, oh my gosh, women aren't going to have the rights in that community that I have that are important to me. And if that became the dominant, ruling sort of, predominant religion in this country, what rights would I lose?
They still have the legal rights.
Different
from another country.
I thought about that, except if they are elected, you know, if they are now my elected representative, what laws will be changed?
Yeah. Well, and then the question is, do you have that same reaction to the community just in Brooklyn that is predominantly or almost entirely Orthodox Jewish?
Right.
But the fear, I think, isn't Islam the fastest growing religion?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Globally?
Yes.
And so it's some grounds for you know, that fear.
But what you have to hold on to at the same time, trying not to be fearful, because fear is the biggest propaganda tool there is. Try not to be fearful. We live in a country that professes freedom of religion and separation of church and state. So if you can continue and improve on, because it's not always a fact, but it is the ground rules.
For now. But that's what she was pointing out, that things can change.
Well, but also, we need to be careful while we hold the power. Do you know the movie The Man for All Seasons about Thomas Moore?
Yes.
And he's talking to his son-in-law, who's saying, well, the law shouldn't allow these papists to hide behind, you know, these laws. And I'm going to cut them down. And
it's a wonderful historic movie.
And Thomas Moore says to him, And when you've cut down every law to go after the devil, and the devil turns around and faces you, where will you hide? Mm-hmm. All the laws being cut down. So, you know, I see much less danger in this Muslim town in Michigan that is still governed by the Constitution of the state of Michigan and the Constitution of the United States than I do in my fellow Christians who want to brush aside the idea of separation of church and state and put the Ten Commandments on courthouse laws.
If I look at those two equally, yes, mm-hmm. I agree with you. But what I'm thinking is, decades from now...
But my point is, we need to strengthen
separation
of church and state and respecting all religions if we want our religion to be respected and if we don't want to set the tradition of, have a national religion, and so the majority religion gets treated differently. And that's where we are now, is the majority religion gets privileged.
Yes,
if we continue to hold that, then when we aren't the majority religion, we will have no ground to stand on to say, well, your religion shouldn't have privilege.
But I am concerned about a religion that it's like when Kennedy was running for president. Mm-hmm. And he's Catholic.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Oh, now we're going to have a papist.
And notice what happened.
In the White House.
And notice what happened.
Yeah, I do notice.
We have a majority. Well, no. Now, we have a majority. The Supreme Court majority is Catholic. Does anybody notice?
Yes. I do notice.
You know.
And poor. What's her name? Is trying to stay alive.
Yes, RBG.
But notice that Anthony Kennedy was Catholic.
Yes.
And Antonin Scalia was Catholic.
Yes.
And so religion does not equal political stances. And as we've talked about in Islam, there is as wide or wider
difference.
I need to see that in the dialogue.
You're not listening
You're only here, just like us.
Yeah.
You're only hearing the far right and the far left.
Yeah.
You're not hearing the everyday common Muslim person.
Islam is really not oppressive to women.
Right.
But it's being abused in countries where they're...
Islam is not really oppressive to women.
No, it's not.
No,
it's not.
Only the extreme Islamists.
Yeah.
Drive around the East Side, where I've had some students that are get in the car with full burqas on.
But
how is that not oppressive?
It's a burqa is oppressive if you're forced to wear it.
They are forced to wear it.
Now, many of the Muslim women will say, "I choose to wear it. I don't have to wear it." You need to get to know some of the people.
I did. Yes.
Like the Jewish. Have you seen the Jewish with all their,
I've had them as students.
Me too.
They have to have female drivers. They can't have instructors. They can't have male instructors.
Maybe the children are forced because the parents are...
The same way our children are forced to come to church because we want to raise our children that way. Mm-hmm. But, and certainly there are... Muslim communities that are very conservative. There are also Jewish communities that are very conservative. There are also Christian communities that are very conservative.
They're in the minority. Now, we're looking at a religion.
Are they? The Vice President of the United States will not meet alone with a woman.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know.
Because he is a conservative Christian.
Oh, my God.
So, the Vice President of the United States will not have a one-on-one meeting.
The other vice president was Jewish, so he wouldn't ride public transportation on the Sabbath.
Right. Lieberman does that.
So, you know, the extremists, there are extremists in all religions.
But
there are also
does no one else fear that?
Do I fear extremists? I fear Christian extremists a whole lot.
I fear extremists.
And I fear Muslim extremists.
Yes, it's the Christian. They have so much power. Our power is growing.
I think you fear the Christian extremists because they don't understand. If you don't keep church and state separate, this could happen. Right. What you're talking about, and they're pushing. They're constantly pushing. Yeah. Yeah. Like Ten Commandments on the
they're growing.
No
they're
prisoners
growing
in
too.
Public
right.
schools.
We
you know,
take a field trip to Michigan to find out for ourselves.
Is it Michigan or Iowa?
I think it's in Michigan.
There is one in Iowa.
Dearborn, Michigan has been taken over by the
Middle East people.
Yes, because that woman that they've been talking about on the TV who said, she's from Michigan, so she may be connected.
I used to live in Dearborn. Yes, I was born in Detroit and I was raised as a child in Dearborn. My brother just sold his house a couple of years ago. And he lived in Dearborn, and one of the reasons he started was because it was becoming overwhelmingly, you know, Muslim.
The same thing happened with the Jewish community in Shaker Heights. That's where my parents, my mother grew up.
Yeah.
And now it is largely Orthodox Jewish. Mm-hmm. And so it's...
But there are religions that have equal rights for women. And there are some religions
Orthodox Judaism doesn't have equal rights for women.
Christians do not.
Christianity does not have equal rights for women.
Or the Roman Catholic Church doesn't either.
My parents moved here from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah.
Because that's a very conservative church.
This is kind of what I've been saying, is that the extremists of all religions have more in common with each other.
Yes.
And the moderates of all religions have more in common with each other than they do with the extremists
in their own religion. That's why I left the Catholic Church back in high school.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we moved here in the late 40s from Grand Rapids, one of the main reasons we moved here, well, my father's job got moved so he could go to St. Louis, where as Catholics we couldn't get a mortgage. Or we could come to Buffalo, where as Catholics we could get a mortgage. And on top of that, the Dutch reformists in Grand Rapids were such a tight, overly conservative group. And all our neighbors were Dutch reformists. And my mother had three babies, and you wash diapers and hung them out, that kind of thing.
Right.
And she did it on a Sunday, and they came they came and took her laundry down.
Oh my gosh!
Took it to their houses, did it, brought it back, did it on Monday, brought it back on Tuesday. My mother was pretty tight. And yet, at the same time, because they didn't play cards and they didn't drink, but they had these nice little screened-in back porches. And they did that every Sunday afternoon. They got drunk playing cards out on their
lawn.
And if they wouldn't let my father have a beer on Sunday, if they saw him out in the yard with a beer bottle, they would reprimand him.
I'm serious. I do.
And this was Christian versus Christian. This was anti-Catholic. Well, look at all these.
I mean, that's why I'm here at this church rather than the church we had down in South Carolina, where women were not allowed to even be on the altar.
Right.
You know,
what religion?
Well, look at abortion rights.
Anglican.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they split from the Episcopal Church down here in South Carolina.
Well, they did here in Buffalo, too.
Yes,
they're aligned
the one
with
that
the Texas diocese.
Oh, right, I was going to say Fort Worth, right?
St. Bartholomew's, the one that my husband wanted us to go to, and I was like, no. When they started preaching from the pulpit about homosexuals being, you know, the scourge of the earth, you know, I'm out up there.
My cousin lives across the street from her church. And everybody in the neighborhood goes to that church, and the street across from her is called Christian Fellowship Drive.
Oh!
You know, and she doesn't bring it up. I mean, I don't have any trouble with her, but it's just a little creepy to me.
Yes, it is. It is creepy.
It's like segregation again.
Yes,
it is. Not all my hands
cut. It's understandable that you're fearful.
I think it's understandable. It's what we do with our
But families. Actually, people need to be educated. They need to know.
Well, that's
people.
Why I write all these letters.
Yes, yes.
I'm a letter writer, you know. I just wrote one this morning about the bully in the White House. Where in my Constitution did I miss the fact that a bully president can hold hostage the federal government?
I know.
But then
I know.
That's the
more than bullying, too.
Well, I know, but why hasn't that been fixed?
And he's also a criminal.
Yes.
Why hasn't that been fixed?
Because somebody needs to have courage. And this, I'm going to take us back to Scripture, and then I'm going to end, and we'll pick this up next week. I'm going to take us back to Scripture and bring it to a close, and then we'll pick it up again next week, okay? One of the role of the prophet in Israel was to speak. The prophet wasn't about telling the future. Prophet was about speaking truth to power. The role of the prophet was to say to the king,
you have no clue,
or to the priests, or to the people, you have departed from the ways of God.
Wow.
And if you look at American history, we're full of secular prophets who have said to us, you are not living up to your ideals. Mm-hmm. And we don't seem to have anybody today willing to say,
you're right.
Well, John McCain.
There is
no
God.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And part of that is, if you look at how prophets died, they very rarely die in their own beds.
Oh, yeah.
All right, I'm going to stop us here.
Okay.
And we'll pick up next week with this same topic, okay?
Okay.
Don't be afraid.